B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, welcome back to Felger and Mads, hour number three. Mike is out today. I'm working from home. Jim Murray is at our studio in Dorchester, as is Matt McCarthy, who's here to give us headlines. Jimmy Stewart and Billy Lanny as well. 617-779-0985. Phone lines are open. Got a couple open spots if you want to jump in. But there was some quote-unquote news today from Major League Baseball. Or in the world of Major League Baseball, the MLB owners have presented players with a new offer, or I should say an altered offer with regard to play for the season. Matt McCarthy just gave you some of the details. And when I first saw the tweets this morning, I admit that I was encouraged. I thought, oh, well, there's some movement here on the part of the owners. Matt, I asked you this earlier, if you could find the tweets from Carl Ravitch.
Yeah, I've got them here.
Okay, that Carl Ravitch really broke the news for ESPN this morning. He did it on Twitter. Carl Ravitch, the host of Baseball Tonight, and tweeted out in a couple of tweets the specifics of the Major League Baseball offer to the players. Matt, why don't you go ahead and read those?
All right, from Carl Ravitch 5 hours ago now. MLB has made proposal to players. 75% prorated salary, 76-game season, playoff pool money, no draft pick compensation for signing players. Season finishes September 27th. Postseason ends at end of October. Significant move towards player demands and effort to play more. According to sources, this equates to roughly $200 million more in player salaries. The 50-game season is not a threat, rather a negotiated right. Hopefully this spurs further dialogue. If not, we will play a short season. And then he adds, olive branch or thistle bush.
Okay, so again, at the end of that first tweet, read that line to me again, Matt. He says a significant move towards player demands.
Yes.
Okay, so this is the part. When I read this tweet, I went, oh, wow, here we go. So the owners are offering the players more money. They're going to play more games of the schedule, and they're going to allow the players to play at 75% of proration. So the players will make more money than they would have under the previous scenario, and they threw in some postseason money on top of it. They even gave the players some concessions during the offseason as it pertains to free agency. And again, most fans don't know all these particular rules, but I read all those things. I said, great, the owners are making a move. They're giving more to the players, except that when you really examine them, they're not. They're not. What the owners did is they actually lowered the guaranteed money slightly. And they said to the players, you'll make that up and then some in the postseason if we play the playoffs. And so one of the things that has really been a point of contention here from the beginning, and it's one of the critical issues in this bartering or this negotiation between the players and the owners, is the postseason. And I'm going to put our producer, Jimmy Stewart, on the spot here because we have a piece of audio that we weren't able to play for you earlier from the owner of the Arizona Diamondbacks, who was on the radio last week in Arizona, talking about the negotiations between the owners and the players and their inability to come to an agreement. And Ken Kendrick, who's the owner of the Arizona Diamondbacks, was asked about the proposal that players had made to the owners at that time. And again, just to get back to the initial point, in that proposal last week, the players said we'll play the regular season through October 31st, and then we will take the playoffs into November. We'll play the playoffs in the month of November. The owners reject that out of hand. They don't want to play games in November. They never have. But here was Ken Kendrick last week out in Arizona.
I want to get your opinion on the counter proposal. It was for 114 games, deferred money, full prorated salaries. What was your reaction to that?
Well, in a word, it's a non-starter. The 114 games, if you look at it, would take baseball literally into the month of December. And we all need to not forget that part of what has been in the air and much discussion from the player side as well as the owner side about the health crisis that we're facing, and we all are fearful. I hope it won't happen. We're all fearful that the virus could return at a very aggressive level later this year. So we do not want to take the risk of putting our players at jeopardy and our game in peril to be playing games beyond the end of October. So our model is and will never be changed, that we will not be playing baseball in the month of November or later. We will play whatever games there are to be played, including the playoffs, and it will finish at the end of October. The commissioner has the absolute authority to set that schedule, and he will not deviate and allow games to be played beyond the end of October.
Okay, so now, Kendrick obviously covers a lot of ground there, but he says at one point, we don't want to play in the month of November for the health and safety of our players and for the health of our game. Do you believe him, Murray?
No, not for a second.
Why not?
Because he's an owner and he's full of it, if nothing else. And it just doesn't, it's not feasible to play the game in November. The weather is too much of an issue.
McCarthy?
I absolutely do not believe him. If they felt that they were able to play more games and make more money, they'd play until December, January, February, March. They'd play the games on Mars. For all, you know, I care, really. This is what it comes down to. The owners have 50 games where they feel like they can make money or they're not going to lose a ton of money or whatever it is. And beyond that, they feel like the money is going to start walking out the door, given the current climate. That's what it all comes down to. Using health and safety there as a prop, as a pawn, Maz, I find it to be pretty gross, all right? They don't care about the health and safety. They care about the money that is going out. They want to play 50 regular season games, and that's all they deem they can afford.
So let me tell you what the biggest non-issue of this baseball labor discussion is. And this is something that I think all fans should listen to closely, okay? The health and safety of the players. This is the biggest non-issue in the whole thing, and here's why. You have the owner of the Diamondbacks, Ken Kendrick, saying right here, well, you know, we don't want to play in December or even in November. We don't want the postseason to spill in there because we're concerned about the health and safety of the players. Bullcrap. That is complete and utter bullcrap. What Major League Baseball is worried about in the month of beyond the month of October and in the months of November and December is a recurrence of the virus because it'll cancel the postseason, and that's where all their money is tied into. All the money is tied into the postseason TV. So if there is no postseason, the owners will not get the revenue from the TV deals, and they won't be able to pay the players if they commit to regular season salaries. That's what the owners are worried about, not the health and safety of the players. As for the players, they are clearly not worried about the health and safety either after shoving it down our throats all summer and spring. And here's why. Do you remember the Blake Snell comment, Murray, about, well, you know, I got to go out there and risk getting the Rona?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Rona? You remember that, McCarthy?
Oh, yeah.
I got to risk getting the Rona? All of the health officials have told us that that later in the fall, there could be a second wave that will be significant because flu bugs typically are seasonal. We've all read and heard this stuff. And yet the players, after shoving it down our throats, that they were risking their health and safety to go out there, came back with a proposal that included postseason games in the month of November. So the players clearly weren't worried about the virus either. Because the health officials have told us that by the time we get into the fall and early winter, yes, the virus could be an issue again, and it could alter life again, and it's going to be out there. So you know what the players said? Well, that's okay. We'll go out there and play in November. So they don't care about it either. Don't let them delude you into thinking that they do, because they don't. Neither one cares about it. The players want to play more games, even if they've got to spill through November, as you guys were saying, and into December, because it'll get them paid. And the owners want to avoid the games in November, because if the virus comes back and cancels the postseason, they don't get their money. That's what the number one issue in this whole thing has been from the beginning. The players want to start sooner. The owners want to finish sooner. And so there's a big issue there over that particular point. And until they figure that out, the rest of it is all just garbage. garbage, which is what both sides are feeding you. And they both get their media flunkies, too, by the way. Carl Ravitch, ESPN, rights holder, with all due respect, because if I were Carl and they gave me the info, I'd have reported it, too. But when you go back and read that and then read what the realities are of that offer, the truth is that that offer was completely slanted towards the ownership perspective. The ones that have come out since, be they primarily from Evan Drellick of The Athletic, who clearly has an in the union, or some of the other stuff on Twitter, many of those are coming from the player side. What you're getting is complete manipulation of the facts from both sides. The offer hasn't changed all that much. The players are offering, or the owners are offering, a little bit more guaranteed money in the month of October if there is a postseason. If there isn't, the players don't get it, and they'll actually make less during the regular season. That's the reality of today. They changed the wrapping paper, but what's inside the box is still crap. It's still crap, if you ask me. 617-779-0985. I see some of you lined up. We'll get to your calls. Now that we have our audio back, we'll play some audio we intended to play earlier in the program. All of that when we return.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for. It's Felger and Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Okay, welcome back. We'll get right back to your phone calls here again. New offer from owners to players in Major League Baseball. But the players have dumped all over it. They don't think it's much of a movement on the part of the owners. I can't necessarily disagree with them on that one. And you do have to wonder, ultimately, whether either side cares to negotiate with the other. I think that's where we are. Kevin is in a car. Kevin, what do you got?
Hey, I think you're totally right. Like neither the players nor the owners think that they want to get back to the game. They're all worried about what's going on in their wallet. So my question is, why have the owners decided that October, November, December is when the cutoff date is? Like, that's not how a virus works. It's not like all of a sudden it's going to come back in October, November, December. So why are they deciding that that's the day that they don't want to come back, and why are they using that as sort of a bluff on the players to not come back?
Kevin, before you go, let me just tell you that the health experts are almost universally telling us, and they told us this from the beginning, that flus and viruses are often seasonal. They tend to come back in colder, colder seasons. And in fact, they've told us here to prepare for a second wave in the fall and in the winter, and that things could be worse the second time around than the first. So I don't think anybody's trying to feed you a false narrative there. The reason the owners want to play in October is because they fear that the postseason is going to get canceled in November, and they might be right. Does that at all change your opinion?
No, that makes sense. I wasn't aware that it was supposed to be coming back in the seasonal thing. I thought by that time, hopefully, it would be working on a vaccine or whatever. But
okay, so look, the vaccine, I think, is a long way off. And not to get too bogged down, on the medical aspect of it or in a coronavirus story. But I think the likelihood is that we are going to have a recurrence of the coronavirus or, of COVID-19 in the fall. There's going to be another wave. And owners have never wanted to play beyond October 31st. It's one of the few things I think they've been really consistent about over the years. They don't want to go into November and December and have the weather become a huge factor and affect the availability of the product as it pertains to the postseason, because that's where the bulk of their money is. Tony's in Holbrook. Tony, what do you got?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for the show. I just think the players, they're really hypocrites because they have millions of dollars already in the bank, and they just forget about the people that are suffering because of the situation.
Tony, how much money do the owners have?
I think they have also the blame, but I most highly hate the players for what they're doing. They're forgetting about what they call the fans.
Okay, so look, I don't disagree with the assessment that the players look worse. Murray, do you think the players are worse or more to blame in this thing, or do you think they just look like they're more to blame?
They look like they're more to blame. They've been more outspoken, and they play right into the owner's hands. And as far as you know, guys like Blake Snell popping off when he's on Twitch, these guys continuing to take to social media and putting out, like, you know, eye roll emojis. I just think it's more relatable for fans with the worker, the player, than it is to the owner. So that's why they look at him and be like, well, I would do this for free or just take the money. And all of us have taken pay cuts or lost our jobs, so you guys are complete idiots. They both suck. But who has been, I think, more hateable? It is the players, because they keep looking like complete a-holes.
I think the players have failed to read the room on this, Maz. You know, I mean, you even see statements like the Tony Clark statement a few days ago after, another one of these negotiations didn't end up going so well. Tony Clark opened his statement by saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, in this unprecedented time with this pandemic going on, we're ready to get back. Don't even mention that right now. You've got one-fifth of the country out of work right now. The country is burning down. Nobody wants to hear the sob story of a baseball player who's making $25 million a year guaranteed, and they're haggling over 50% prorated, 75% prorated, or 100% prorated. And I say that fully understanding where the players are coming from, because I think the cuts the owners asked them to take were completely obscene. And I think the owners have tried to hold the players over a barrel on this, but I think the players have failed to read the room. Because you look, you know, the average American is going to look at that guy. You know, you've got a guy out there out of work right now saying, wait, these guys are haggling over 75% prorated or 50% prorated. Screw you. The players can't seem to understand that. It's not that hard. It's not that difficult a concept to wrap your head around, guys. The world is burning down, and you can't seem to look outside and realize it.
So I'll tell you, Matt, one thing I learned about the Major League Baseball players over the years, I'm talking about the union overall, I don't think they failed to read the room. I think they don't care. I don't.
Fair point.
And it actually makes them it gives them greater strength at the bargaining table. They don't mind being the bad guys. They're okay being the bad guys. You want to tell us to go to hell? Go to hell. Fine. We don't care. The game's about us. So they have leverage as players, because ultimately they're the ones who perform. It's something that Marvin Miller taught them many, many years ago. It's now been absolutely born into the culture of the baseball player. They're very entitled. And I say this almost as a compliment, they don't care about being the bad guys. So the owners have won the PR battle in this thing. They won it early on. They established that. They put pressure on the players, at least publicly, to do the right thing. But you tell me, as much of a beating as the players have taken here in the last few months, and most of it has been directed at the players, has their position changed?
No.
What do you mean the position's changed?
I mean, have they softened their demands in the bargaining based on all the criticism they've received?
Oh, no, not a bit. No, not a bit.
Not one bit. They want 100% prorated salary. They've made it very clear.
In fact, if you remember the initial 82-game schedule, the owner said prorated pay. Well, the players thought they were going to get prorated pay, meaning get paid for 82 games. The owners offered them cuts. The players came back and said, not only are you going to pay us for the 82 games, we're actually going to ask for 114. So now we want 114 games. They went the other way.
And it's a contradiction. It's a contradiction that they say that they're concerned about safety and then propose the 114-game season, which would put them more in harm's way. It just shows, again, it's ultimately about them getting as much money as possible.
Yeah, on both sides. And really, I'm telling you, the big point of contention, Murray, is that postseason. That's really what it is. The owners are saying, we're happy to pay you if we can guarantee the postseason, but we can't. So what we're asking you to do is put some of your money into the postseason, and if they play it, you'll get it. And the players are saying, no, we're not going to do it that way. No, we're going to play regular season games, and then where we are is where we are then, and if you want, we got to extend the season, we'll do whatever we have to do. But my greater point with the players is you can kick the crap out of them all you want. They're not going to change their minds. One of the real strengths of the players' union is that they will remain unified and they'll dig in on a topic. I think ultimately what you're going to see happen here is I think you're going to see the commissioner set a 50-game schedule or 48-game schedule. And then the question is, which players show up? If any of them show up, maybe they all hold out and strike, in which case there will be no baseball. Thomas and Quincy, go ahead, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, when I called Friday, and I was so optimistic and happy and in a good mood from the Stidham stuff and all that good stuff. It didn't take long for MLD to piss all over those good feelings. And it's almost like when I didn't hear anything really over the weekend about it, I'm like, they're saving it for the weekdays, right? So then I hear today, and I only heard you guys a little bit, even Beelan so early. I haven't heard a whole lot on the radio. I did hear about the Ravage thing, but I'm going to go back to when I started calling about this topic, and it started with the Boris comment. And I still genuinely believe when he came out so blatantly, so, you know, intentionally in a foul, you know, defiant comment saying, we're not going to budge, we're not going to do this, when in the end, he really doesn't have to say, but it's the mindset that was out there with MLB, the players in it, that they weren't going to budge on any of this. They want the most amount of money they can get. They want to play the most amount of games they can because the more money they get and all this other stuff. So when I heard about the Ravage thing, and then I heard about the guy that was the reporter that talked about the three different proposals, in the end, from what I understood it read was, each proposal still ends up being roughly 33% of pay. So what have they actually done, Tony? What have they done besides just change the verbiage? And at what point did they just nuke this?
So, Tom, what they've done is they changed the wrapping paper. They changed the wrapping paper. That's the only way I can describe it. And I said this last week, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I could see it coming, that it feels to me like the owners settled on a value for what the season was worth to them. And the season is worth about $1.5 billion. That's what they'll pay the players, and that's assuming that they'll play the postseason, that they can absorb $1.5 billion. So there it is. And what they've effectively said to the players is, that's what we're going to give you. You guys figure out how you want to divide it up. That's the number. Now, you can divide it up by playing more games and putting it in some of it in the postseason, fewer games, in which case you'll still get the same amount, but you have to work less for it, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it's the same dollar figure. So they can do a percentage cut and play more games, or no percentage cut and play fewer games. Either way, they're going to end up at the same place. And I'll tell you, you ask an interesting question. You know, why don't they just kill it? So I'll tell you what, maybe we'll get into that topic when we come back. In the interim, Reentry Monday, presented by East Boston Savings Bank. Maybe you're looking to refinance a home mortgage or commercial real estate property, or maybe just looking for a free checking account. Visit ebsb.com. That's East Boston Savings Bank, getting it done since 1848. Here's McCarthy with the latest.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Felger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Maz.
The guy's psychotic.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Stop it. Since Brady left, you know, Julian, you've seen all the memes on Twitter, you know, poor Julian looking longingly at Tampa and Brady and Gronk. And, you know, I'm getting the sense that it's, obviously, he misses his guys, but this is just the opposite, we've been hearing now since the moment Brady walked out the door that we're not any good. And now Julian's taking it to the, well, I guess I wasn't any good either. You know, I mean, 100 catches last year playing with, you know, on one leg and with one arm for various points of the season. I guess I wasn't good either. So I think there's clear motivation, not just with him. I think with a lot of guys that are saying, hey, we're a little better than you give us credit for. We're not going to just collapse because Tom Brady's not the quarterback.
It's Mike Giardi, NFL Network, joined us earlier today talking about Julian Edelman. And again, Giardi sent out a tweet earlier today that I thought was kind of interesting, talking about Julian Edelman and how, according to another player, Edelman was extremely motivated to prove that he wasn't just a product of Tom Brady. And, you know, I wondered at the time whether, you know, I think we all wondered whether the Patriots were going to keep Edelman on this roster, given some of the offseason changes that they made and some of the decisions that they made. Brady left. They traded Gronk. And it felt like there was a little bit of an overhaul going on there. Jamie Collins, Kyle Van Noy, big changes on the defense, at least in the middle of it. Danny Shelton also allowed to go. Felt like maybe the Patriots were orchestrating or commencing a rebuild. And some people even wondered back at the draft whether Edelman was going to get traded. I think there was a rumor, Murray, wasn't there? Didn't Bill Simmons tweet something out about how, or said something on a podcast about how Edelman was going to go to Detroit? Do you remember that?
Yeah, and it was based on, it was a baseless rumor. It was like a someone, an unverified Twitter account, you know, put something out there. It was like some blogger, and then he ran with it.
But, you know, a lot of people did wonder, and we discussed it on the show, whether or not Edelman might pout in the absence of Brady, whether he was worth keeping here, whether Tampa Bay would want Edelman. I mean, we introduced and engaged in a number of scenarios. And I think now maybe we're starting to understand why the Patriots are keeping Edelman. That Edelman's got a little bit of that chip on his shoulder, too. The chip on the shoulder that has defined the Patriots for the last 20 years. Some of it because of Brady. Some of it because of Belichick. Some of it because of guys like Edelman, who was drafted in the seventh round as a quarterback, told that he couldn't play in the league and has turned into one of the better receivers in football. And I found it to be a pleasant surprise and good news. Like, as much as I joked last week, Murray, about Stidham and the idea that Stidham working out and getting the receivers together and, you know, organizing workouts was an overplayed story, the idea that Julian Edelman has a chip on his shoulder, to me, might be a little underplayed. Like, I think that could be a really good thing for the 2020 Patriots.
Oh, it's there's no downside to it, and it leads me to believe that it's something I kind of figured it's that Edelman is essentially going to be the face of the offense, unless Stidham goes out there and has like a really good year. I don't expect him to go out there and light it up, and I just refuse to acknowledge that it could be Brian Hoyer at quarterback. But in terms of that offense, like, who could it really be? It's Edelman, as long as he's healthy and dedicated and isn't, you know, mad that Tom Brady is somewhere else.
And do you think that? Oh,
sorry,
go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, let's not ignore the fact that the Patriots need culture guys right now, because let's not forget how important Tom Brady was to the culture of this franchise for, what, 18, 19 out of 20 years, depending on how you view the way that things went in the last year, year and a half, 2 years. They need guys like Edelman right now. They need those guys with that chip on their shoulder. They need it more than they've needed it in quite some time. I think it's critical for them.
Do you think Edelman needs to prove that he can play without Brady, Murray?
Yeah, I do, a little bit. And it's more just, it's not even so much about Brady. I said it earlier. It's more about what he's turned into here the last couple of years, because he's getting older. He's taking a beating. Those type of receivers that go over the middle, you saw what happened to Welker. It's not like a slow roll to the end of your career. It's a quick drop off the cliff. And last year, not just because of injury, like, he didn't really have that great of a year. He was one of the league leaders in drops. So I think he really needs to prove it to himself that he's still a pretty good player more than anything else. That's like, I'm good without Brady.
Matt?
Yeah, I think it's important for Edelman, you know, because fairly or unfairly, there's been this, I guess, narrative that Tom Brady has made guys like Edelman or Wes Welker or Troy Brown. I mean, just about every person in that position has been successful for the Patriots over the last 20 years. So you say the one constant there is Brady. Now, I don't believe it. I mean, I think Edelman is as talented as a receiver as they've had outside of, you know, Randy Moss, who is another worldly talent. But I think there is that national narrative around the country. It's like, well, you know, Tom Brady made Julian Edelman. And if he plays well without Brady, particularly at an advanced age with a young quarterback or with Brian Hoyer, that will only look better for him moving forward. I think it is a big deal for Edelman. Yeah, I did.
I mean, I think Edelman's stock dropped a lot last year. I'm with Murray on this. I look at Edelman, and let's not forget that the last time the Patriots won the Super Bowl, not that it was that long ago, Edelman was the MVP of the game. Julian Edelman was the best player on the field. And so he came back last year, was not the same player. The passing game wasn't the same. And Murray, you made the point earlier, the drop against Tennessee on second down there in the fourth quarter was one of the biggest plays of the game. And that was a massive, massive mistake.
Oh, yeah, and it changed the complexion of it, and there's still Patriots fans that hold him responsible solely for that loss because of that drop, which is ridiculous. But that was a bad play at a big moment.
I mean, the idea that Edelman has something to prove without Brady is certainly true. Everyone does on that team and in that organization, including Belichick. There is that burden. They all have to prove that they can win without Brady. But I do think, and I guess, Murray, I side with you on this one, too, is that the Edelman's greater challenge here is proving that he's not cashed and he's not done. Because he looked like a guy, he looked to me last year like Wes Welker started to look toward the end.
Yeah.
The drops went up. He didn't appear to be the same player. And, boy, if he could come back and have some sort of renaissance or a good year, it could really go a long way towards helping the Patriots' future, even if it's for 1 year, because I do think that he is a big hand in bringing Jared Stidham along. I think that's, at the end of the day, I think that's the number one reason he's here.
Those type of wide receivers, not just Welker, another guy that always comes to mind from, 20-some-odd years ago was Wayne Krabet. You can only take that kind of a beating for so long, and then it's just, bang, it's like gone.
I mean, he's 34 years old. He had tons of injuries last year. I mean, it's a tall ask. It is. I mean, anything you get from Edelman at this point is completely bonus, given the history of guys at that position. I would say, I mean, I forget how old Welker was. When he was with the Broncos, I would say Edelman has been
right
better.
Around this age.
Yeah, but Edelman's, it just seems like he's been better later into his career than Welker was. Can he keep it up? I mean, it's a tall ask. It is.
So a lot going on in the world of sports, despite the fact that there are no games being played. Incredibly, obviously, Major League Baseball, you have the ongoing labor issue. In the NFL, Roger Goodell made some statements last week that were powerful, to say the least. So we'll examine those when we come back. Don't go anywhere on Felger and Mass.
Boston's home for sports. Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Not complaining.
Oh, you're the mean boss. Aw.
It's just Felger.
No, 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 no. It's always no.
Felger, Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It has been a difficult time for our country, in particular, black people in our country. First, my condolences to the families of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and all the families who have endured police brutality. We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe black lives matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much needed change in this country. Without black players, there would be no National Football League. And the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of black players, coaches, fans, and staff. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, markedly different approach than Drew Brees took, at least at the beginning of last week. Brees obviously changed his tune as time went along, but Roger Goodell, right out of the gate, expressing his support for Black Lives Matter in the wake of the George Floyd incident, among others, that obviously have created a storm around the country on multiple levels. And the NFL taking, in many ways here, an aggressive approach. And when I say aggressive, it's not like the NFL, certainly not like Roger Goodell, to come out and admit mistakes from the past. And obviously talking about the events of 3 years ago when there was enormous debate over whether a player should be kneeling and expressing protests on the sideline. Murray, as you know, I was in the stands with the fans at Gillette Stadium that day. I think it was a game against the Houston Texans, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and I told you I was at one point. You know, my kids were at the time 12 and 9, and turned to me and wanted to know why people were so angry and yelling at the players on the sidelines. So, there's a lot of emotion about it at the time. There's a lot of emotion about it now. And just your preliminary thoughts on what Goodell said on Friday night and what his motives may have been.
I think it's kind of twofold what the motives are. I mean, on one end, I don't think that he's like a heartless, cold a-hole and is like, no knees going forward. We already made the rules and you must follow the rules. No, I think his heart's in the right place for the most part. But I also think that there's an ulterior motive for the shield and the brand. You know, you've seen so many other leagues and brands, whether it's Coca-Cola or whoever, put out statements. And it's basically good for business, right? I think that if you don't see it, people are calling for it. And even if it may feel a little bit forced for some, you got to put it out there, because otherwise you look like, well, you're going to end up getting, I think, the Twitter mob after you, or the, you know, people are going to lose their minds about it. So I think it's, you know, them trying to protect themselves and also, you know, also doing the right thing too.
Whether or not it's now good for business and we can have that debate, it is a striking change from the NFL and from Roger Goodell's handling of, you know, similar situations 3 years ago. This is, you know, the NFL tried to handle that situation as delicately and as politically as they possibly could. They didn't want to ruffle feathers. And of course, the president got involved 3 years ago. And, you know, that made things uncomfortable for the league. And they had to have these meetings with the players and they had to, you know, reconsider their protocols around the national anthem and all that. This is so different from 3 years ago. I was honestly shocked at how different it was, Maz, because, I mean, Goodell came out and pretty much let you know where he stood on the issue, you know, kind of politics be damned on this. So I thought it was a striking and monumental shift from where they were 3 years ago. They got out ahead of this. They got out in front of this. And Roger Goodell, I think, you know, he certainly let you know where he's standing on this, that's for sure. And I thought that was a real change from a few years ago.
So you mentioned President Trump, Matt, and President Trump tweeted out after Goodell's video, could it even be remotely possible that in Roger Goodell's rather interesting statement of peace and reconciliation, he was intimating that it would now be okay for the players to kneel or not to stand for the national anthem, thereby disrespecting our country and our flag? Could it even be remotely possible? Trump asked. So let me ask you guys, do you think that Roger Goodell effectively opened the door and is now going to allow players to kneel on the sideline and publicly protest during the national anthem in the fall?
Yeah, I don't know how you couldn't let them after putting out something like that.
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, to me, again, I don't know how he could go any other way after saying what he said in that video. I mean, to me, it feels like the NFL is absolutely going to allow that. I mean, I think Goodell's going to look like a massive hypocrite and total fraud if he then tries to go to the players and tell them, well, no, you can't do that. That you can't do. You can peacefully protest in the locker room, but you can't kneel on the sideline. Like, I just don't see how he could possibly go back and reverse field on that one. So, I mean, lots of interesting points made with regard to the anthem and what Goodell's motives may have been, one of which was raised by Lewis Riddick on ESPN this morning. We'll play that for you in the next segment, because I just think it's one of the best things I've heard here about where the NFL is overall. Quickly, Brian in a car on the Patriots and Jarrett Stidham. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, on the thing with the O-line earlier, Murray had kind of mentioned the coaching change at the offensive line coach. I think the even bigger thing is just, you know, how many offensive lines historically, and it's probably changed a little bit in recent years because everything's offensive now, but how many lines in the first year with the first-year starter typically, you know, don't have major problems early on, in large part because the young quarterback doesn't maybe recognize things happening before the play that a veteran quarterback would recognize. And even the Ravens last year, I would just, you know, I'd throw a little asterisk on it because Lamar Jackson's just such a unique player that Stidham obviously can't replicate just about any of those skills. the bar for an offensive line to be good with a first-year starter that can't do those types of things Jackson does is extremely high.
So, Brian, just to clarify, you think that they're going to have difficulty this year in the offensive line?
Yeah, think about how many things happen pre-snap with the quarterback, whether it's shifting the line or bringing it back, you know, who's going to go out for a route back into protect, that Stidham might take a couple months to learn. You know, I mean, those are the type of things that blow up a play before they even start.
Okay, so thank you for the call. And the reason he brings that up is that earlier on I read to you something that Greg Bedard had written in sort of his preseason assessment of the Patriots. He thinks they'll be in the top half of the league. He's got them at about 9 wins and says that they could have one of the best offensive lines in the league. And I know, Murray, that caught your eye as well as mine.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of ifs. I mean, maybe they could, because towards the end of 2018 and certainly during that postseason, they were the offensive line's the reason that they won the Super Bowl. But last year they had so many injuries, and now you're counting on those guys to be what they were in 2018, specifically on the right side of the line, which I thought was a massive disappointment. And guys like Marcus Cannon and Shaq Mason, who weren't right all year. So are they going to be back to form? What can you expect realistically out of David Andrews? And as the caller mentioned, like I said earlier, you don't have Dante Scarnecchia anymore, too. So I don't know. I don't like the depth there all that much. You're counting on guys like Yodney Cajuste that you drafted last year, so he's an unknown. I just think to say that they're the best offensive line in football, I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, I suppose it could end up being that way. I mean, if they all stay healthy and play to their capability, could it be a really good group and the strength of the team? Sure. Yeah, I'll allow for that. And certainly at the end of two seasons ago, so that would have been the 2018 season, the Patriots offensive line, at least as it pertained to the running game, was one of the strengths of the team. No two ways about it. They were a running team late in the year, and their offensive line was a huge part of that. They also had Gronk in that group, and were able to really effectively have 6 men on the line because of Rob Gronkowski. But even so, Trent Brown was still here, lots of variables. This team, last year, the offensive line, I thought, was really poor. Now, look, it got better, I guess, as the year went along. The overall play of the offense wasn't good, but I just have a hard time calling them one of the best offensive lines in the league. To me, that group has a lot to prove. In any case, I keep pumping this Lewis Riddick audio that I heard this morning. And when I say the audio, I really mean the opinion or the perspective that I thought was really important. And I thought it was a great observation and something, I guess ESPN stole it too. It wasn't their thought originally, but nonetheless, something worth getting into. We're going to play that for you. Longest commercial-free segment here. Matt McCarthy will get you caught up. Don't go anywhere. And then we'll play for you exactly what Riddick said earlier in the program. We had some technical difficulties. Couldn't play it for you. So we'll play Lewis Riddick for you when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.